Certainly glad that you're here this morning, especially those that are visiting with us. We certainly hope you'll linger for a little bit after the services, that we can get better acquainted with you, especially if it's your first time here. We appreciate you coming and being with us this morning. We invite you to follow along on the charts behind us this morning as we look at our subject this morning. And certainly we hope to glorify God in everything that we do here. We appreciate everything thus far this morning. Appreciate Gary's words. I am very well acquainted with Eutychus after preaching for 30 years. I've seen a lot of people sleep, so I don't have any problem with seeing that, especially from the standpoint if someone is ill or someone is having problems. But hopefully, if you are just sleeping this morning, hopefully you can stay awake for just a few minutes this morning as we try to worship, the Lord together. Today I want to take you to Luke, the 15th chapter, Luke chapter 15. We're going to divide this chapter from three parts into four today. In the fourth part of what I would term this parable, the older son, it says in verse 25, "Now his older son was in the field, and as he came and drew near the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked what these things meant. And he said to him, 'Your brother has come, and because he has received him safe and sound, your father has killed the fatted calf.' But he was angry and would not go in. Therefore his father came out and pleaded with him. So he answered and said to his father, 'These many years I have been serving you. I have never transgressed your commandment at any time. Yet you never gave me a young goat that I might make merry with my friends. But as soon as this son of yours came, who has devoured your livelihood with harlots, you killed the fatted calf for him.' And he said to him, 'Son, you are always with me, and all that I have is yours. It is right that we should make merry and be glad, for your brother is dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.'" As we look at the story, we see the very beginning of this in Luke chapter 2 and in verses 1 and 2. It says, "And all the tax collectors and sinners drew near to him to hear him. And the Pharisees and scribes complained, saying, 'This man receives sinners and eats with them.'" It is amazing to me that these people at this time, these tax collectors and sinners that were drawing near to Jesus, the Pharisees and the scribes complained. I don't suppose they would turn down worship one time. They love to be a part of the worship of God. We see over in Matthew chapter 23, though, and in verse 23, we see a problem here that's stated by Jesus. It says in Matthew 23 and in verse 23, "Woe to your scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you tithe mint." You'll split up. You'll take a tenth. You'll split up that little bit of mint. You'll split up dill and cumin. "But yet you have neglected the weightier measures of the law. Those things are justice and mercy and faithfulness. But these things, But these are the things you should have done without neglecting the others. They wanted to worship. They wanted to worship. They wanted to worship God. They wanted to tithe. They wanted to divide up. They even got to the point to where they divided up these small spices into a tenth. But these other things, they had just forgotten. They had neglected the weightier provisions of the law, justice and mercy and faithfulness. In Luke and in chapter 18, a couple of chapters over, chapter 15, Luke chapter 18 and in verse 9. Luke 18 verse 9, as he introduces, and we're not going to go into the Pharisee and the publican, but just as he introduces this, chapter 18 verse 9, he says, "And he also told this parable to some people who trusted in themselves that they were righteous, and they viewed other people with contempt." I always wonder about that. I always wonder how we view other people. Oh, we view maybe a family coming in with a nice car, and maybe it's a husband and wife, and maybe it's three beautiful children in the back seat, and they all get out and they have their Bibles, and we view them maybe as prospective people that are going to maybe come here and worship with us at Gardner Lane. And then maybe somebody else comes in, maybe a not so good of a car. And maybe we look at them, I wonder what they want here. Are they wanting money? Is that what they're wanting here? Sometimes we get to that point to where we pick and choose who we're going to view possibly, and other people that we're going to view with contempt, like the scribes and the Pharisees did here. They felt superior. They felt superior to the sinners of that day. But Jesus here, in the beginning of this chapter, he spends time with sinners. He didn't justify the sin. He didn't overlook the sin. But in Luke chapter 19 and in verse 10, it says, "For the Son of Man has come to seek and to save that which is lost." So we go to the point now of Luke chapter 15. We'll read the first parable here, Luke chapter 15, verse 3-7. It says in verse 3-7, it says, "He told them a parable saying, this man, what man among you, if he has 100 sheep, and has lost one of them, does not leave the 99 in the open pasture and go after the one which is lost until he finds it. And when he has found it, he laid it on his shoulders, rejoicing. And when he comes home, he calls his friends and his neighbors, saying, rejoice with me, for I have found my sheep which is lost. For I tell you, in the same way, there is more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents." More joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 who need no repentance. There's more joy in heaven over these people that are coming to me and changing their lives than what you scribes and Pharisees are doing. He says, chapter 15, verse 8, "Or what woman, when she has 10 silver coins and loses one coin, does not light a lamp and sweep under the house and search carefully until she finds it?" I don't know if it's actual coins. I don't know if it's the coins that the women would wear in their hair back in that time period. Whatever the situation is, she lost it. And she's looking diligently for it. It says in verse 9, "When she found it, she calls together her friends, her neighbors, saying, rejoice with me, for I have found the coin which I lost, which I had lost. In the same way I tell you, there is joy in the presence of angels over God, over one sinner who repents." And then thirdly, in chapter 15, beginning of verse 11, A father that loses a child to the world. It says in verse 11, a man had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the share of the estate that falls to me. So he divided his wealth between them. And many days later, the younger son gathered everything together and went to the journey into a distant country. And there he squandered his estate with loose living. Now when he had spent everything, a severe famine occurred in the country and he began to be impoverished. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country. And he sent him into the fields to feed the swine. And he would have gladly filled his stomach with the pods that the swines were eating, and no one was giving anything to him. And then he came to his senses and said, how many of my father's hired men have more than enough bread, but I'm dying here with hunger? I will get up, I will go to my father, and I will say to my father, Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me as one of your hired men. So he got up, came to his father, and while he was still a long way off, his father saw him, felt compassion for him, ran, embraced him, and kissed him. And his son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to the slaves, quickly bring out the best robe, put it on him, put a ring on his hand, sandals on his feet. Bring the fatted calf and kill it. Let us eat and celebrate, for this son of mine was dead and has come to life again. He was lost and has been found. And they began to celebrate. What happened? There was a turning point. There was a turning point in this young man's life. And that was that I'm going to go home. I'm going to go home to my father. Then we see concerning the father. I don't know how far of a journey it was back home. But the first one that he encounters was his father. Why did Jesus tell the story? How did he tell this story of the prodigal son? Because there were people that were complaining. There were people that were criticizing here at this time. This is probably one of the most beloved stories that Jesus ever told. In fact, some people say it is the greatest short story that's ever been written. And it would be amazing if the story ended there. The story. Dad, I can't wait for you to die. Can you imagine? I can't wait for you to die. Go ahead and give me my inheritance now. How cold that would be. To treat your father like that. Then he goes into the far country. Spends all of his money. Ends up in the pig pen. And then finally realizes that he needed to go back home. And here we see again the story of the father. It says here that when he saw him a great way off, or when he was still a great way off, his father saw him, looking for him. He had compassion. He ran, fell on his neck, and kissed him. And I suppose that's continuous active tense. He kissed him again and again and again. Because he was so happy to see his son that was lost. So in the time we have left, I want to take us now to the older brother. And what happens with the older brother? Back to Luke chapter 15. And in verse 25, beginning, it says, "Now his older brother was in the field, and when he came and approached the house, he heard music and dancing. And he summoned one of the servants and began inquiring what these things could be." What do we see regarding the older brother? The first thing we see is they had a suspicious heart. He had a suspicious heart. He comes back. He approached the house. He hears music and dancing. Something's going on. Something's going on in that house. This isn't like every other day in that house. Something different is going on in that house today. In fact, you might even go as far as to say something is wrong. Something's wrong here in this house. Something has occurred. You know, a suspicious mind. A suspicious mind is a nasty mind. People that have evil suspicions toward various things. I think about over in 1 Samuel in chapter 1. In 1 Samuel chapter 1, to where Hannah is there just praying. In 1 Samuel chapter 1 and in verse 11 and 12. 1 Samuel 1, verse 11 and 12. It says in verse 11, "And she made a vow and said, O Lord of hosts, if you will indeed look on the affliction of your maidservant and remember me, and not forget your maidservant, but will give your maidservant a son, then I will give him to the Lord all the days of his life, and a razor will never come on his head." Now it came about as she continued praying before the Lord that Eli was watching her mouth. For Hannah, she was speaking in her heart, but only her lips were moving, but her voice was not heard. So Eli thought that she was drunk. Suspicious. A suspicious mind. Maybe the people that have suspicious minds today. In 1 Timothy chapter 6 and in verse 4. 1 Timothy chapter 6 and in verse 4. It says 1 Timothy 6 and in verse 4. "He is conceited and understands nothing. He has a morbid interest in controversial questions and disputes about words, out of which arise envy, strife, abusive language." And then he says, "evil suspicions." And his suspicion was true. His brother had come home. This was a nightmare to this man. A nightmare to this man that his brother had come home. He had a suspicious heart. Christians, ladies and gentlemen, are not to develop suspicious hearts. Are you willing to give your brother, your sister in Christ, the benefit of the doubt? Not only that, but we see here in chapter 15 of Luke, and in verses 27 and 28, that he has not only a suspicious heart, but he has an angry heart. An angry heart. In verse 27, beginning, it says, "And he said to him, your brother has come, and your father has killed the fattened calf, because he has received him back safe and sound. And when he heard that, in verse 28, it says he became angry. He became angry and he would not go in. And his father came out and began pleading with him. Anger is a great tool of the devil. We see in Colossians and in chapter 3 and in verse 8, Colossians chapter 3 and in verse 8, Colossians 3 and in verse 8, it says, "But now you also put them all aside." In the chapter, in the context, you've put on a new self. So you put all these things to the side now. And what do you put to the side? Anger, wrath, malice, slander, abusive speech from your mouth. But the first thing that Paul stated there was anger. He says over in Ephesians and in chapter 4 and in verse 31 and 32, Ephesians chapter 4, verse 31 and 32, Ephesians 4, verse 31 and 32, as he talks about in this context about the Christian's walk, about how a Christian ought to walk. It says in verse 31, "Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and slander be put away from you along with all malice. Be kind to one another, tenderhearted, forgiving each other, just as God in Christ also has forgiven you." This older brother, he had an angry heart. He was angry because the younger son has returned. A lot of times families are destroyed by anger. Many times churches are destroyed by people being angry. The older brother was angry. Angry that this younger brother had repented. He had come back. He had come back to his father. And the father had restored him to full sonship. Put the ring on his hand. Put the robe on him. Killed the fatted calf. And the older brother couldn't take that. Sort of reminds me of Jonah over in chapter 4 of Jonah. It says in chapter 4, verse 1 of Jonah, it says, "And it greatly displeased Jonah, and he became angry. He prayed to the Lord and said, 'Please, Lord, was not this what I said while I was still in my own country? Therefore, in order to forestall this, I fled to Tarshish. So I knew that you were a gracious and compassionate God, slow to anger, abundant in loving kindness, and one who relents concerning calamity. Therefore now, O Lord, please take my life from me, for death is better for me than life.' And the Lord said, Do you have good reason to be angry? Do you have good reason to be angry?' And then later on, again, in chapter 4 and in verse 9, it says, 'And God said to Jonah, Do you have good reason to be angry about the plant? And he said, I have good reason to be angry, even to death. Then the Lord said, You had compassion on a plant for which you did not work, and you did not cause to grow, which came up overnight and perished overnight. Should I not have compassion on Nineveh, the great city, in which there are more than 120,000 persons who do not know the difference between their right and their left hand, as well as many animals?'" He was angry. Angry that these people repented. Well, not only a suspicious heart, not only an angry heart, he had an unforgiving heart. In Verse 29 and 30. But he answered and said to his father, "Look, for so many years I have been serving you. I have never neglected a command of yours, and yet you have not even given me a young goat so that I may celebrate with my friends. You've killed the fatted calf for him. You won't even give me a goat burger with my friends." And he says, verse 30, "But when this son of yours came, who has devoured your wealth with prostitutes, you've killed the fattened calf for him." In Mark and in chapter 16 and in verse 7, Mark chapter 16 and in verse 7, Mark 16 and verse 7, at the resurrection that Gary was talking about this morning before the Lord's Supper, it said, "Go and tell his disciples and Peter, he is going ahead of you to Galilee, and you will see him just as he told you." Or in John and in chapter 21 at the very end of the book of John, the breakfast by the sea, as Jesus asked him, "Simon, do you love me more than these?" He said, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." He said, "Tend my lambs." He said to him a second time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" He said, "Lord, yes, you know that I love you." And he said, "Shepherd my sheep." And a third time he said, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" And Peter was grieved because he said to him the third time, "Do you love me?" And he said to him, "Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you." And Jesus said to him, "Tend my sheep." Jesus had a forgiving heart. Do we have a forgiving heart? And the last thing here, I'm out of time now, is a graceless heart. In chapter 15, and in verse 29, he answered and said to his father, "Look, for many years I have been serving you, and I've never neglected a command of yours. And yet you've never given me a young goat so that I may celebrate with my friends." At the very beginning of this passage, these people weren't interested in the sinners. They weren't interested in the tax collectors that were coming to Jesus, with other sinners that were coming to Jesus, because he shouldn't have time for them. He should just make time for us. And in the story of the prodigal son, we see the story of the young man coming back to his father after he basically tells his father, "I don't have time for you to die. I want you to go ahead and give me my money now." But then he comes back to the father, and the father receives him. But this older brother, relationally, he serves the father. He doesn't leave the father. He does everything for the father. But his heart is far removed from the Father. I would encourage you this morning, if you need to respond to the gospel in any way by being baptized into Christ or coming back to your first love, whatever your need might be, come right now while you're going to stand and we sing.